Woodward tried hard to undo the damage Fillmore had done to his case, but Fillmore stuck by his guns. He was convinced that someone had extinguished the lanterns in the hallway and that someone had turned the registration book around. He also insisted that there was a key in the door lock in addition to the key the sheriff took from McAllister. Frustrated, Woodward took his seat.
Gentlemen of the jury, Creed Howard came into Falcon McAllister's room not by mistake, but with the clear intention of murdering him in revenge for the death of his two brothers, Thad and Bob. He believed, and rightly so, that McAllister was responsible for both of them, and it made no difference to him whether or not those deaths were justifiable. In order to carry out his scheme, he first had to learn which room McAllister had taken. A perusal of the registration book, which Mr. Fillmore found turned around toward the customer side of the desk, would reveal that to him. The fact that McAllister was in the adjoining room was a convenient coincidence. Next, he had to have the key. This he got by reaching across the counter and taking the key from its hook, unobserved by Mr. Fillmore. Then, as he climbed the stairs and walked down the hall, he extinguished all the lanterns. This would have afforded him the opportunity to slip back into his room without being seen. His plan was to shoot Falcon McAllister, use the cover of darkness to go back into his room, from which he would have emerged a moment later to join the others, as if drawn to the scene by the gunfire. And finally, gentlemen of the jury, I ask you to consider the rhythmic pattern of the shots fired. Three out of four witnesses report the same rhythm. Three shots, followed by a fourth. I submit that Howard fired three times in quick succession. Bang, bang, bang. At the bed where he thought McAllister was sleeping. One of his shots missed entirely, but two of them hit the bed where, but moments before, Falcon McAllister had been lying. Unfortunately for Creed Howard, McAllister wasn't in his bed. When Howard began firing, McAllister had no recourse but to return fire, which he did by shooting one time and one time only. We have already heard expert testimony as to the accuracy of Falcon McAllister's shooting. One shot was all he needed.
Woodward's summation was almost an exact duplicate of his opening remarks. He had thought that Roosevelt, not being a lawyer, would be an easy adversary. He was wrong. He'd been outclassed, and the beads of sweat on his upper lip as well as his body language showed that he knew it. With both cases rested, Judge Heckmeyer charged the jury with their responsibility.
Gentlemen of the jury, you have now heard both sides in the case of the Dakota Territory versus Falcon McAllister on the charge of manslaughter. And while you are not being asked to decide life or death, your decision is a weighty one, because it could deprive a man of his freedom for as long as 20 years. Consider the arguments carefully, discuss the case among yourselves, and come to a conclusion based upon the fact that to find for the prosecution, you must be convinced beyond a reasonable doubt as to the guilt of the defendant.
Roosevelt and Anna were having lunch at Bessie's Cafe. During their lunch, several people came over to speak to Roosevelt, congratulating him on his job as a defense attorney.
I think it's just awful how people won't let you alone. Why, they won't even let you eat your lunch in peace.
I've chosen the life of a politician, Anna. This is the price one pays for that choice. In fact, if people weren't interested in talking to me, I'd be totally ineffective.
I have no idea why anyone would choose such a life for themselves.
Some might think it's because of a streak of vanity. And if I was to be honest with you, I'd have to say that there is some.
I don't consider you a vain man, Teddy. Why, I think you're very unassuming.
Roosevelt held up his index finger.
Ah, that just means I am a skilled politician, able to cover up my streak of vanity. But seriously, there is more to it than that. I love this country, and I feel an obligation to serve the public in whatever capacity I can.
In whatever capacity?
Yes.
What about president? Would you like to be president of the United States?
What politician would not want to be president?
I don't know, Teddy. That would be an awesome responsibility. I don't know how anyone could rise to that task.
I know. It's not a decision I would make lightly.
On a more immediate subject, what do you think is going to happen in the trial?
I think he will be acquitted. But I hasten to add that it isn't because of anything I did. The wonder is that he was charged in the first place. It was clearly a case of self-defense.
I agree. But Mr. Woodward did make a telling point, I think, when he pointed out that while the normal person is never called upon to kill another in self-defense, it has happened many times with Mr. McAllister. Why do you suppose it has happened to Falcon McAllister so many times?
McAllister is a man who lives life on the edge. And because of that, he is often challenged.
I am sure that is so. But that is also why my father doesn't like him. Father believes that a man chooses his path and could change his life so that there are no more challenges.
I know. And he does have a point.
Shaw, Childers, and Yerby were also at Bessie's Cafe, sitting at a table in the back corner of the dining room.
Is that her?
That's her. That's Heckmeyer's daughter.
She sure is a pretty thing. If you ask me, this could turn out to be fun.
No. We'll snatch her. We ain't gonna do nothing to her except use her to force Judge Heckmeyer to order Frank released.
Well, now, wait a minute here. You'll get Frank back, but what'll me and Shaw get out of the deal?
Frank's your cousin. That makes him blood.
Yeah, well, he ain't no kin to me.
But he's your pard. Ain't that enough?
I reckon it might be, but he's your brother, so it's more important to you than it is to Dalton or me to get him back. But the thing is, me and Dalton is taking the same risk as you, and we ain't getting nothing in particular for it.
Frank ain't the only reason we'll be snatching her up.
What other reason is there?
Well, look over there for yourself. Do you see the way she and Roosevelt's just sparking it up? The way I figure it is, we'll grab her, then we'll send a message to Roosevelt and the judge telling him that we'll let her go when Frank is out of prison and Roosevelt pays ransom.
Oh, what's ransom?
It means that if Roosevelt wants her back, he's going to have to pay money for her.
Yeah. Well, if you put it that way, it sounds like a good idea.
Well, I hope it turns out better than your other two ideas. The bank robbery didn't work out none too good, and neither did robbing Roosevelt on his way into town.
This one will work. And as long as we've got the girl, there ain't nobody going to be coming after us on account of they won't want to see the girl hurt.
I hope you're right.
So you can see why there can't nothing happen to the girl. Not until afterward.
Afterward?
After they let Frank go and pay us some money. After I'm finished with her, you two boys can have a little fun with her.
What do you mean, after you're finished with her? Why should you be first?
If you don't like the arrangement, you can always go back to that toothless whore you and Dalton took up with back in Puxico.
No, now. However you want it, it's fine with me. Long as I get my turn.
At that moment, Sheriff Merrill stuck his head through the front door of the cafe.
Mr. Roosevelt! The judge wants you back into court. The jury's reached the verdict.
Roosevelt and Anna, damn near everybody else in the cafe, made a beeline for the courthouse. Within minutes, Childers, Yerby, and Shaw were the only three customers left in the place.
Damn, did you see that? Most of them folks just got up and left perfectly good food on their tables.
I reckon they're hurrying to see if they can get in to hear what the jury's got to say.
I hope they find the son of a bitch guilty.
Shaw got up from the table and started wandering through the dining room, looking down at the plates left.
Oh, looky here. There's a whole chicken leg that didn't get it. Oh, looky over there. There's a half a piece of apple pie.
Dalton got up from the table then and, like Shaw, began wandering through the dining room, looking for uneaten leftovers. Anna was the only one in the gallery who didn't have to fight for her seat. That was because the bailiff had kept it for her. She was in her seat, and Roosevelt and Woodward were at their respective tables when Falcon was brought into the courtroom. Anna found Falcon McAllister to be a fascinating man. One of the things that had impressed her when she had met him back in New York was how handsome he was. but he wasn't handsome like the drawing room dandy she had met back in New York. The best description she could think of was ruggedly handsome. He looked like the mountain man that was his stock. When you added that to his reputation, there was something frightening about him. And yet, beneath that rather frightening veneer, she knew that he was a man of honor and integrity. She knew also that no one who was in the right need fear. It was hard to equate the picture that was being painted of him now, a man of danger and daring, with the gracious man who had invited her to join his theater box.
All rise!
Despite the fact that Anna found herself in disagreement with her father over Falcon McAllister, she couldn't help but feel a tremendous sense of pride in him. She could sense the honor and respect everyone in the courtroom had for him. But that honor and respect, she knew, wasn't limited to the courtroom. Her father's standing throughout the entire territory of the Dakotas was impeccable. And she knew that not all judges enjoyed that reputation.
Be seated. Bailiff, please bring the jury in.
All eyes turned toward the door to the jury room. And a moment later, the jury, 12 men good and true, trudged back into the room. The jury took their seats, then looked toward the judge. Anna studied their faces to see if she could detect any hint of what their decision might be, but all maintained a studied and stoic countenance.
Gentlemen of the jury, have you reached a verdict?
The foreman of the jury stood.
We have, Your Honor.
Please publish the verdict.
With a great sense of drama, the foreman drew his glasses from his pocket, then put them on, looping them carefully over one ear at a time. He opened up a sheet of paper.
We, the jury, after careful consideration of all the facts presented, find the defendant, Falcon McAllister, not guilty.
Mr. McAllister, you having been found not guilty by a jury of your peers, I order that all bonds and restraints be withdrawn. You are free to go. This court is adjourned.
Without another word, the judge left the courtroom, exiting by a door behind the bench. Anna Heckmeyer was one of the first to congratulate both Roosevelt and Falcon.
Well, thank you. Though I must confess, I was a little concerned for a while.
You had no confidence in me? Oh, you of little faith. I am wounded to my core. To my core, sir.
No, I had every confidence in you. It was the judge I was worried about.
You shouldn't have worried. I told you that my father's a fair man. I knew he would conduct an honest trial.
You did tell me that, that's true. And I must admit, I found no fault with his conduct of the trial. But I am relieved that this is all over.
So, my friend, what is next for you?
After 2 weeks in jail, first thing I want is a bath. Then a good dinner. A few beers. A hotel room for a few days.
No need for you to stay in a hotel. Why don't you come out to Elkhorn for a few days? You'll be a lot more comfortable in my guest room than you would be in the hotel. And I can just about guarantee you that nobody will barge into your room in the middle of the night bent upon killing you.
Sounds good to me. I believe I'll take you up on it.
It wasn't long before Roosevelt and McAllister were riding out toward Elkhorn.
Are you a reader, Falcon? I hope you don't mind being addressed by your first name.
I would consider it an act of real friendship to be addressed by my first name. And to answer your question, I do read when I get the opportunity. I often carry a book or two with me, but I'm on the trail so often that books are sometimes difficult to come by. I've been known to read and reread the same book many times.
Back at Harvard, we called that study. I think you will like my house.
I'm sure I will.
It's a low-lying, one-story house of hewn logs. The roof is pitched so that it is higher in the middle, but the ceiling is only 7 feet high at the walls. It is clean and neat, with many rooms, so that one can be alone if one wishes to.
It sounds very nice.
The reason I asked if you were a reader is because I have a library in the house.
A library?
Well, a library of sorts. Rough board shelves hold a number of books. Without them, I fear some of the evenings would be long indeed.
I'm sure they've brought you a great deal of comfort.
Yes. That is, to the degree that anything can bring me comfort right now.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have stirred up old memories.
Oh, no. Don't be sorry, Falcon. I appreciate your concern. And I'm a big boy now. I will get over this.
Roosevelt took in the mountain vista with a broad wave of his arm.
And this will help me do just that.
I'm sure it will.
I think you need a respite as well. It can't have been very pleasant for you spending several days in jail.
I can't argue with that. And the idea that I might have to had spend several years in jail was more than I wanted to deal with. If I hadn't expressed my gratitude to you for defending me, I'm doing it now.
You were innocent of the charge. It is easy to defend an innocent man.
I'm curious. How did a back east man like you wind up with a ranch out here in the Dakotas? I know why you're here now, but you already owned the ranch, didn't you?
Yes. I think by tonight you won't have to ask that question. We'll have a nice dinner, then go out to sit in rocking chairs on the veranda. The house stands on the river brink, and from the porch, which is shaded by leafy cottonwoods, you can look across the sandbars and shallows to a strip of meadowland, behind which rises a line of sheer cliffs and grassy plateaus.
Sounds nice.
It is, and I can guarantee you this. In the summer evenings, when a cool breeze stirs along the river and blows in your face, why, that veranda is the most pleasant place in all the Dakotas. You can sit with a book in hand and you don't even have to read. You just rock gently to and fro and gaze sleepily out at the buttes opposite until their sharp outlines blur and turn purple in the afterglow of the sunset.
The way you're describing it, I'm about to fall asleep in the saddle right now.
Don't do that. You've got a way to go yet.
Over dinner that night, Roosevelt began talking politics.
I've never been much for politics. Truth is, I never even cast a vote.
You have never voted? Why not?
I always figured that I can take care of myself without any interference from the government. And regardless of who's in the office, it has never made that much of a difference in my own life.
Ah, but that isn't true, my friend. The bulk of government isn't legislation, but administration. That means you could never escape being governed. We must either govern ourselves, or we must submit to being governed by others.
That's a noble thought. And I can see how, for someone like you who lives and works in a big city, that would be important. But my life is in the mountains and the open spaces. I visited New York a few years ago, and I couldn't wait to get out of there. I've always figured to just let the rest of the country take care of itself. Things are plenty good enough for me, just the way they are.
And nothing the government has ever done has concerned you?
I reckon the war between the states was over political differences, and a lot of good men died on both sides because politicians couldn't work things out. Seems to me like the politicians might have failed us then.
I can see why you would have that attitude, and I must say that in that instance, I agree with you. But it has always been my belief that this country won't be a permanently good place for any of us to live in unless we make it a reasonably good place for all of us to live in. That is the job of a good politician, and I've always tried to apply my life to that principle.
I'll say this for you, Teddy. If ever I met anyone who could rightly be called a man of destiny, it's you. I just have the feeling that one of these days I'm going to tell folks that I knew you when.
From your lips to God's ear, my friend. Now, what do you say to a little hunting trip tomorrow?
Sounds good to me. What are we going after?
Elk. After all, this is Elkhorn Ranch.
It was raining when they woke up the next morning, but that didn't deter the eager young man from the east. The cook had prepared a generous breakfast of biscuits, bacon, and eggs, which Falcon and Roosevelt washed down with hot black coffee. Falcon always did have a good appetite, but it seemed even more stimulated here. After they finished the meal, Roosevelt looked through the window and saw that while the heavy rain had stopped, a light drizzle continued to fall.
You do have a slicker, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you had better wear it. It doesn't look to me like this is going to end anytime soon.
15 minutes later, the two men were more than a mile away from the cabin, riding through the light but steady drizzle.
I think taking an elk is one of the most magnificent things a man can do. I'm sure you've hunted elk before.
Yeah, I've hunted elk.
Of course you have. And even larger and more magnificent game, if I don't miss my guess.
Falcon had once killed a bear with a knife, but he wouldn't have used Roosevelt's word magnificent to describe the incident. The bear had attacked him and left him badly mauled. It was touch and go for a while. If it had not been for his wife, Marie Gentlebreeze, and the Indian herbs and cures she applied to kill the infection, he would have died. They were following along a stream that emptied into the river. The stream itself produced sloughs, and one of them curled back against a beaver dam where the water had pooled and spilled out over the banks to create a small lake. Falcon saw several birds take flight, and from the agitated way they were flying, he knew they'd been frightened by something. He stared into a thicket of aspen trees and saw a movement. Falcon was about to point it out to Roosevelt when he realized that the young ranch owner had already seen it. The fact that he had seen it as well surprised Falcon, and his respect for this rather fascinating man increased. Suddenly, the elk broke out of the trees and started across the meadow.
There he is. You're my guest. He's all yours.
No, he's yours.
By now, the elk was 3/4 of the way across the meadow, and Falcon realized that he should have taken the shot when it was offered. He could still bring the animal down, but it might be too late for Roosevelt. Without a verbal response to Falcon's offer, Roosevelt raised his rifle to his shoulder and aimed. Falcon saw a little puff of dust fly up from the elk's hide, as well as a tiny spray of blood where the bullet hit. The shot was a perfectly aimed heart shot. The animal's front knees buckled, and he went down head first, then tumbled and fell. He tried once to get up, but he managed only to get the front part of his body up before he fell a second time. This time he was still.
Good shot, Teddy.
Thank you.
Looking toward him, Falcon saw that Roosevelt had lowered his rifle and was just staring at the elk, now still.
Are you all right?
Yes.
He put the rifle back in its saddle sheath, then took off his glasses and began wiping the lenses. He made no effort to approach the elk he had just killed.
Do you ever have a feeling for the animals you kill?
Yeah, I have those feelings all the time. Even when I need to kill for food, I'm aware of what I'm doing.
Animals are the innocence of this world. They are God's creatures, just as we are. I don't think we are necessarily superior to them, just different from them. But only man has the intellect to change the environment. And that means we are charged by God to be the stewards of all creation.
I've never thought of it in just those words. But now that you put it that way, I reckon I agree with you.
Yes, well, we are all failing in that. I don't know if I will ever be in a position to do anything about it, but if I am, I intend to see that we start living up to our obligation. Look at this place. What a terrible thing it would be if none of our grandchildren could enjoy this beautiful West because we had failed in our responsibility.
Somehow, Teddy, I believe you will be able to keep that from happening.
The pensive mood passed, and Roosevelt smiled.
Let's go get the elk, shall we? I'll have the cook prepare elk steak for our supper.
It was a week before Childers, Yerby, and Shaw were able to put into operation their plan to kidnap Anna Heckmeyer. They needed to find a time and a place where they could take her without being seen, and that opportunity presented itself at about 9 o'clock one night. Never suspecting that she might be in danger, Anna had visited the home of Millie Jackson, a longtime friend. Millie was soon to be married, and after supper, Anna stayed for a while, talking with her friend about the upcoming wedding. It was dark when Anna left Millie's house and started down the street toward her own home. Walking in the dark wasn't an intimidating experience for her. She'd walked all over New York despite the well-known denizens of that city. And yet, as she passed by a large open lot, she suddenly got a strange feeling of foreboding. Anna stopped and looked out into the dark shadows of the lot, but she saw nothing. She didn't know why she was experiencing this sensation. She only knew that she was, and she pulled her shawl more tightly around her and quickened her pace. There was a picket fence at the other end of the open lot, separating it from the adjacent house. Anna hurried toward the fence, thinking it would be the debarkation point for her apprehension. But she was startled when three men suddenly stepped out from behind the fence. Two of them grabbed her, and one put his hand over her mouth to keep her from screaming. She bit him on the hand.
Ouch! You bitch bit me!
Don't let go of her mouth! We can't let her scream!
A third man had a bottle and a cloth, and Anna watched with alarm as he poured liquid from the bottle onto the cloth. That done, He held the cloth up to her nose and mouth. Anna struggled and tried to twist her head to get away from the cloying smell of the cloth. The man with the cloth clamped it down more tightly over her face, and she felt herself growing dizzy. Her knees weakened, and then everything went black.
Oh, what do we do now?
Get her in the buckboard. We're gonna take her out to the shack.
Oh, what if she comes to and starts screaming?
We'll put a gag in her mouth.
Maybe you ought to give her some more chloroform.
No, any more might kill her. We need her alive.
Taking her back to the alley, the three men put Anna's limp form into the back of a buckboard. At once, something Aaron planned had gone off without a hitch.
Oh.
The first thing Anna noticed when she woke up was that she had a terrible headache. She had never had a headache as bad as this one, and she had no idea what might have caused it. The next thing she was aware of was the rough texture of the bed. Instead of the smooth satin sheet she was used to in her own bed, this was a very coarse texture, almost like a burlap bag. Then she became aware of fetid, sour odors. Obviously, this was not her room. She tried to sit up, but discovered that wherever she was tied to the bed. On the verge of panic now, Anna looked around to try and determine where she was. But the room, if indeed it was even a room, was so dark that she couldn't see anything. The blackness was total, so absent of any ambient light that it was overpowering. She had never seen any place as dark as this. And for a moment, she wondered if she was still alive.
Hello? Is anyone here?
I'm here, girl.
Who are you?
Name is, Percy. Percy Shaw.
Every nerve ended in Anna's body called out for her to scream. But she held the impulse in check, intuitively knowing that panic would only make things worse. She forced herself to be as congenial as she could.
I'm pleased to meet you, Percy. My name is Anna.
I know who you are, girl. That's how come we snatched you.
We? You mean there are other people in this room?
Well, not now there ain't. Right now there ain't nobody here but me and you. Aaron and Dalton is going to take a note to your pa.
A note? What kind of note?
Oh, it's one telling your pa that if he wants you back, he's got to come up with some money. Oh, and he's got to let Frank go, too.
Frank? Who's Frank?
Frank! He's Aaron's brother, what's in the territorial prison. Your pa's the one what put him there. So Aaron figured to make your pa tell the folks at the prison they gotta cut him loose.
My father won't do that. He won't tell them to let Frank go.
What do you mean? You ain't telling me your pa would just sit back and let you die, are you?
I think he will do whatever his conscience tells him to do. He might give you the money, but I can guarantee you he won't turn a convicted criminal out of the territorial prison.
Yeah? Well, we'll just see about that.
Anna was quiet as she contemplated her situation. She didn't know exactly how her father would react to this, but she was reasonably certain that he would not bargain for her release. He was nothing if not a man of principle. And when it came to being true to his principles, he would do so to the death. Or, she realized, her death.
Mr. Shaw?
Yeah? What is it?
Could you light a lantern, please? What's so funny?
We ain't got no lantern.
A candle, then.
No, I can't do that neither.
Why not?
'Cause I'm lying on this here bunk over here, and I'm pretty nigh naked. All I got on is my undie drawers.
I promise you I won't peek. I just don't like the dark.
You ain't got to be scared of the dark with me in here.
But aren't you one of the ones that brought me in here? And didn't you just say that if my father doesn't meet your demands, you will kill me?
Yeah, I guess that's right, ain't it? I mean, I am one of the ones you need to be scared of. But if it'll set your mind at ease, I ain't planning on doing nothing to you right now. And I won't do it in the dark.
Anna was quiet for a few minutes longer, Then she called out to him again.
Mr. Shaw, I have to go to the privy.
Just hold it.
I can't hold it. I had a lot of punch at my friend's house tonight. I have to go.
Then go!
I can't. I'm tied to the bed.
I mean, just go right there in bed.
Please, Mr. Shaw. I cannot do that.
Well, then you really don't have to go all that bad, do you?
Please? You can go with me and keep an eye on me.
You mean I can watch you?
I mean, you can stand outside the privy and watch to make sure I don't run away.
There ain't no privy. If you go outside, the onlyest thing you can do is just squat down on the ground somewhere.
Then you can come with me and watch me squat down somewhere, but please just let me go.
All right, but I am coming with you. And don't you tell Aaron or Dalton nothing about this.
I won't. I promise.
Ow! Damn it, I kicked my toe against the table.
Shaw lit a candle. The candle provided a soft golden bubble of light. It was dim and yellow, but it did serve its purpose. Shaw walked the rest of the way over to her bed then, and she noticed that he was, as he said, in his underwear. As he leaned over to untie the rope that held her secure, she realized that his almost overpowering body odor was one of the smells she had detected when she first awoke. Anna sat up on the side of her bed for a moment, rubbing on her wrists and ankles to get the circulation restored.
Well, now you said you had to go, so go. Don't just sit there.
Hold on for a moment. It'll take a minute before I can walk. You had those ropes awfully tight.
It wasn't me that done it. That was Aaron.
All right. I'm ready to go now.
Good.
Suddenly, Anna sent her foot up toward Shaw's crotch.
Oh, my gator sacks!
Anna saw a nearby chair and she grabbed it, then brought it crashing down over Shaw's head as he was bent over. Shaw went down under the blow. With a surge of excitement, Anna dashed across the room, jerked open the door, and ran outside. She had no idea where she was, how she would get home, but she didn't care. Anna had made her escape at the exact moment Aaron and Dalton were returning from their mission of delivering the ransom note to Anna's father, and she had run right into Aaron's arms.
Here now, Curly, where do you think you're going? Well now, didn't we come along at just the right time?
How did she get away? Where's Shaw?
Oh, I hope she killed the son of a bitch before she ran out of there.
We don't mean that, Aaron. He's one of us.
No, Shaw ain't one of us.
Me and you's blood kin. Only cousins, but that's blood kin. Percy Shaw ain't shit.
When Anna didn't come down to breakfast the next morning, Judge Heckmeyer wasn't too concerned. He knew that she had visited Millie the night before, and he assumed she had just stayed over.
Judge?
Looking up from the breakfast table, Judge Heckmeyer saw his housekeeper. There was a strange, pained expression on her face.
Yes, Sally, what is it?
The gray-haired woman, who had been his housekeeper since his wife died many years earlier, held out a piece of paper.
I found this slid under the door.
What is it?
I think you better read it.
Curious and somewhat concerned by his housekeeper's strange demeanor, Heckmeyer looked at the note. It was hand-printed in large block letters. The first thing he noticed was that his name was misspelled, as was nearly every other word.
Judge Heckmeyer, we have took your daughter. If you want her back, you must let Frank Childers out of prison and give us $5,000. If you agree to this, hang a red cloth in your front window. We will contact you again when we hear that Frank is let out of jail.
Judge Heckmeyer sent for Roosevelt as soon as he read the message, and the young rancher was soon sitting in Heckmeyer's house, drinking coffee and listening to the judge.
I didn't think anything about it at first. After all, Anna's a grown woman, and Millie has been her friend for many years. I just assumed she stayed over last night. Then this morning, I got the ransom note I told you about.
If you're worried about money, Andrew, I'll gladly pay the $5,000.
No, it's not that. I'm not worried about the money. I have $5,000. It will break me, but that would be a small price to pay to get my daughter back. It's the other thing I'm worried about.
The other thing?
They are also demanding that I issue orders releasing Frank Childers from prison. I can't do that, Teddy. I won't do that.
Even if it means Anna's life?
Yes, even if it endangers Anna.
I see.
No, I'm not sure that you do see. Teddy, if I issued orders to free Frank Childers, I would be repudiating everything that I have ever stood for. I can't do that.
So, what do you plan to do?
Heckmeyer lowered his head and pinched the bridge of his nose. He was silent for a long time before he lifted his head again. He wasn't weeping, but Roosevelt saw that his eyes were red-rimmed and filled with the pain of his situation.
I don't know. Lord, help me. I don't know.
I have an idea. You probably won't like it. In fact, I'm sure you won't like it, but it is a possible answer.
What is it?
I'm warning you, you won't like it.
Look, if it will get Anna back safely, I will like it, no matter what it is.
All right. Send Falcon McAllister after her.
What? Are you serious?
I told you you wouldn't like it.
Well, you were right. I don't like it at all.
It's the only way.
What do you mean it's the only way? There has to be another way.
I'm sure there is, but nothing comes to mind right now. What about you? Do you have any ideas?
No. Just what do you think McAllister would do? For that matter, what could he do?
As for what he would do, I believe he would do whatever it takes to get Anna back safely.
Why would he? I mean, he knows what I think about him.
Because he is a man of honor.
Yes, yes, so you've said. Still, I can't see him.
And he regards you as a man of honor. Despite how you feel about him, you conducted the trial fairly and honestly. Good men see that in each other, Andrew. I believe Falcon McAllister would go after Anna if you asked him to. And what's more, I believe he would bring her back safely.
You really think so?
I know so.
All right. I'll ask him. When do you think would be a good time to see him?
How about right now?
Right now? Where can I find him?
He's waiting on your front porch.
Falcon sat on the porch swing while Roosevelt was inside talking to Judge Heckmeyer. Falcon hadn't said anything about it, but he was going to go after the man who kidnapped Anna with or without the judge's blessing. That was because Falcon knew something that neither the judge, the sheriff, nor anyone else knew. He knew who it was that kidnapped the girl. The note had asked specifically for Frank Childers to be released from prison. Only one person would want Frank Childers released, and that was Aaron Childers. As Falcon sat in the swing, he felt a soft, warm breeze start up, carrying on it the scent of the red roses that grew in such profusion at the end of the porch. At moments like those, Falcon envied those men and women who could find satisfaction in living tranquil lives in bucolic settings. But he could not do that. He couldn't settle down. His father once told him that he was born under a wandering star.
Falcon, would you come inside for a moment?
Getting up from the swing, he followed Roosevelt into the house. The judge lived in one of the nicer houses in Medora. It was a large, two-story brick house with a wide front porch. Just inside the door was a foyer, with the parlor off one side and the dining room off the other. From here, a wide, grand staircase climbed to the second floor. The foyer was open all the way to the ceiling of the second floor, from which hung a long chain supporting a chandelier filled with dangling crystal prisms that caught the morning sun and projected little splashes of color on the walls. Judge Heckmeyer was standing just inside the foyer.
Mr. McAllister, would you come in and visit for a few minutes?
All right.
Coffee?
Yeah, thank you. Black.
The judge nodded at the housekeeper, then Falcon and Roosevelt followed him into the parlor. The judge offered Falcon an overstuffed chair, and as Falcon settled into the dark maroon upholstery, he got the idea that this was normally the judge's chair. The judge had offered it to him, which meant the judge wanted something from him. Heckmeyer waited until the coffee was brought before he spoke.
I'm sure you've heard the news about my daughter being kidnapped.
Yeah, I've heard.
Teddy, that is, Mr. Roosevelt, suggested that you might be able to, get her back.
I might.
Then I'm asking you. No, I'm begging you. Please do so. I'll pay you any amount of money you want, just...
Falcon held up his hand.
I don't want any money.
All right, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to demean you by offering money. It's just that I...
You want her back?
Yes.
Judge, during the recent trial, you heard Mr. Woodward make reference to the number of men I've killed in self-defense, did you not?
Yes, of course I heard it.
And if truth be told, you agree with him, don't you? I mean, with regard to how many times I find myself in situations where it has been necessary for me to kill.
I have some concern about that, yes.
But clearly, if I undertake this mission for you, I may well find myself in the same situation again.
You mean you might have to kill to save your life?
Yeah, or to save the life of your daughter.
Then do it. I know this is unmasking me for the hypocrite I am. Here all this time I have derided you for killing in self-defense, and now I am telling you that I would understand it if you killed the men who took my daughter from me. Understand it? God help me, I would welcome it!
Do you have the note they left?
Yes, it's right here.
Have you heard anything else from them, since this note, I mean?
As you can see there, they say they will get in touch with me again when I have authorized the release of Frank Childers. I must confess that I am totally at a loss as to what to do now.
You want my opinion?
Yes, of course.
Release Childers.
What? No, I can't do that. I won't do that.
Falcon handed the note back.
Then I'm sorry. If you don't release Frank Childers, there's nothing I can do to help you.
What on earth are you saying? Teddy, what is this? You told me he could help me. If the only way to get my daughter back is to release Frank Childers, then I could certainly do that with no help from Mr. McAllister.
Let me talk to him.
You can talk all you want. Unless he releases Frank Childers, there's nothing I can do.
Why must I release Frank Childers?
How else are we going to find your daughter?
What do you mean?
After Frank Childers is released, he's going to go straight as an arrow to his brother. That's where your daughter is. I'm going to follow him and get Anna back.
What about Frank Childers?
I'll take care of him, too.
What do you mean, take care of him?
You want your daughter back?
Judge Heckmeyer nodded.
Then issue the order releasing Frank Childers.
Judge Heckmeyer closed his eyes and pinched the bridge of his nose. It did not escape his notice that Falcon had not answered his question as to what he meant by taking care of Frank Childers.
I don't feel very good about doing this, but... if it is the only way...
It is.
Very well. I'll send a telegram ordering his release today.
No, send a letter. That will give me time to get there. I need to be there when they let him out.
All right.
Oh, and hang up the red cloth. If Frank's brother doesn't know he's being released, he won't be there to meet him. And if he doesn't meet him, I won't be able to follow them to find out where they're holding Anna.
All right, Mr. McAllister. Whatever you say.
When Falcon and Roosevelt left the house, they walked down to the Golden Spur. After greeting several other regulars, they took a table in the back of the room.
You are convinced that Aaron Childers is the one who kidnapped Anna?
He's one of them.
One of them?
There are three.
My word, I just realized. It's the same three, isn't it?
The same three?
The three men who attacked me that day. The ones you drove off. They are the ones who have kidnapped Anna.
Yeah, I think so.
It wasn't just a happy circumstance that you came by that day, was it? You were already looking for them, weren't you?
Yeah, I was.
Why?
I found a man, Luke Douglas, dying, and his wife, Mary, already dead in their burning house. Childers and the other two murdered him. I made a vow that day to hunt him down and bring him to justice.
I get the feeling that, regardless of what Judge Heckmeyer might have said today, you were going to go after them.
I was.
Well, it is indeed a noble cause for someone like you.
Someone like me?
A rough rider.
A rough rider? I don't think I've ever heard that term before.
Of course you haven't. I just coined it.
What's a rough rider?
My definition would be a warrior for justice. You say that Aaron Childers is one of the bandits. Do you know the names of the other two?
Yeah. One of them is Aaron's cousin, Dalton Yerby, and the other is Percy Shaw. Shaw's no kin to either of them.
How is it that you know them?
Their names came out in the trial.
What trial?
Six men had robbed a bank in Belfield. I shot two of them, Ethan Yerby and Corey Childers. Ethan was Dalton Yerby's brother, and Corey was Aaron Childers' brother.
Did you kill them?
No, I just wounded them. Frank Childers came back for him, and we wound up capturing him and the two wounded men. Aaron, Dalton, and Percy Shaw got away. They killed Sheriff Billy Puckett. Puckett was a friend of mine. He was a good man who deserved better than to be shot down by the likes of that bunch of thieves and outlaws.
So now Aaron is trying to get Frank out of prison. What about the other two?
The day they were to be hanged, there was a jailbreak. Corey and Ethan had both been killed by Luke Douglas.
I thought they killed him.
No, they killed each other.
Good for Mr. Douglas. So, what do we do now, and when do we start?
We?
Yes, of course we. I'm going with you.
No, you ain't.
But of course I am. In the first place, as I am sure you are aware by now, Anna is of some personal concern to me. And of course, Judge Heckmeyer is my friend, which means I have every obligation to go. And the fact that these three men once launched a personal attack against me gives me every right to go.
You ain't going with me.
Come, Falcon, be reasonable. If Frank Childers is released from prison and joins with the other three, that would be four of them. Four against one? Even for you, the odds are quite formidable.
You ain't going, Teddy, and that's it.
Would you give me one reason why not?
I told you before, Teddy. You're a man of destiny. Don't ask me how I know it. Maybe I've been around the Indian so long that I have the medicine. I just know that if something happened to you because of me, I would be cheating not only you, but the world.
That's nonsense.
No, it ain't. And what's more, you know it ain't.
Even so, that isn't reason enough to keep me from going with you.
Then how's this for a reason? I'm gonna crack you over your head.
Oh? I believe I've already given you a demonstration of my ability to defend myself.
Yeah, now that you have, Teddy, you have. And that's why I know I will be able to keep you from joining me. I won't fight fair. I'll wait until your back is turned, and I'll club you with my pistol.
Falcon, my friend, you make a good argument. All right, I won't try to go with you. At least, not in person. But I will be with you in spirit and prayer.
That's all I need.
Aaron Childers was about a half mile out of town, but he chose a position that would give him an unrestricted view of the judge's house. Pulling a spyglass from his saddlebag, he climbed up a little hill alongside the trail, lay down on a rock, then looked through the lens. There it was, in the right front window, a splash of red. Happily, he climbed back onto the horse and rode quickly back out to the cabin where Dalton and Percy were watching over Anna.
He's gonna do it.
How do you know? Did he give you the money?
No, not yet he ain't, but he's going to, because he's got him a red cloth hanging in the front window just like we told him to.
When do we get the money?
Just hold your horses on the money. We'll get the money after we've got Frank back.
Well, now, it seems to me like it ought to be the other way around. We should get the money first, then go get Frank.
I'm the one making the decision here, and as long as I'm making the decisions, we're going after Frank first.
All right. But after we get him, then I think maybe we ought to take us another vote on seeing just who is in charge. 'Cause so far, your being in charge ain't worked out all that good.
All right. Soon as we get Frank, we'll take another vote, if that's what you want.
Yep, that's what I want.
Percy, you dumbass. If we take a vote with his brother here, who do you think is gonna win?
I don't know. I guess I just wasn't thinking is all.
That's your problem. You never think. Besides which, he seems to be doing all right now, don't he? The judge hung up the red cloth, which means he's going to do it all. He's going to turn Frank loose and give us some money to boot.
Yeah, but what about them other times when nothing Aaron did went right?
I tell you what, Percy, you don't have to stay around. Fact is, why don't you just light out now?
Before I get my share of the money? No. There ain't no way you're gonna get rid of me that easy.
Then keep your mouth shut and do what I tell you.
He looked over toward the bed where Anna sat.
And keep an eye on her if that's not too big a job for you.
Oh, listen, she's smarter than you think. She tricked me.
Hell, Percy, she doesn't have to be very smart to trick you. You're one of the dumbest sons of bitches I ever met.
You got no call to be a-talking to me like that.
I'm going to the prison to meet Frank when they let him out. You two stay here and stay out of trouble.
We'll be here when you get back, Aaron.
Yeah, I know you will. The question is, was she? Are you going to give us any trouble, Missy?
Oh, don't worry about me. I'll have a nice supper cooked for you when you get back.
Percy, I'm taking your horse.
What? What do you mean you're taking my horse?
How else are we going to get Frank back here? We sure ain't going to ride double.
But you can't just take my horse.
No, take it easy. We'll get Frank a horse soon as he gets back.
I'll go out with you, Aaron. I expect I'd better get up on a hill and keep a lookout for a while. Wouldn't want someone dropping in on us all unexpected.
Both Aaron and Dalton left the cabin, and Percy walked over to the front window to watch him leave.
I don't care who he is. He don't have no right taking my horse like he done.
I can't believe he treats you the way he does. Aren't you all supposed to be partners?
Yeah, we're supposed to be partners. But Aaron, somehow he's got the idea that he's the only one that knows anything, and he's always bossing me and Dalton around.
I admire the way you stand up to him, though. You are much more defiant than Dalton.
Defiant, huh? What's that mean?
It means you're showing him that you're a man and you can't be treated like a puppy dog.
Yeah. Yeah? Yeah, that's the way I feel about it, too. You mean you can tell that?
Of course I can tell it.
Oh, Aaron, he don't know who he's dealing with, does he? One of these days I'm gonna set him straight.
I know you will.
Percy stared at Anna for a long moment.
What are you doing?
I beg your pardon?
You're buttering me up, ain't you? You're just trying to get on my good side so you could trick me again.
No, I'm not, Percy.
Yes, you are. You've done it before.
I'm sorry about kicking you and trying to escape. I was frightened and I didn't know what was going to happen to me. Now I know you a little better. I'm not quite as afraid.
Yeah? Well, you better be afraid of me, woman. Because if you try anything funny again, I'll kill you.
You don't want to do anything like that, Percy. If you kill me, my father won't pay the money.
Yeah, well, just don't you try anything else.
Falcon McAllister was having lunch when an officer of the prison came into the cafe and crossed over to his table.
Mr. McAllister.
Yeah?
I was told by the warden you are to be informed as to the exact moment Frank Childers will be released.
That's right.
I don't know what got into the judge ordering him released. If you ask me, the son of a bitch should have been hung a long time ago.
When is he scheduled for release?
At 1:30 this afternoon. Will you be there to meet him?
No.
Then I don't understand. What do you have to do with his release? Does Childers know you are here?
No, he doesn't know, and he isn't to be told. You understand me? No one is to be told that I'm here.
All right, if you say so. I'd sure like to know what's going on, though.
Although Falcon wasn't going to say anything at all about why he was there, he decided that he should give the man a little information in order to keep him from asking questions that might get out of hand.
Well, I'm working for the court. At this point, that's all I can tell you. And I'm sure that as an officer of the law, you have had to keep secrets before. Secrets that, if they got out, would cause someone to lose their life.
Yes, sure, of course I have.
Well, good. The court asked the warden to select a man of honor and trust. I'm glad to see that the warden chose wisely.
But don't worry. Your secret is safe with me.
Can I buy you beer?
Oh, thank you. No, I have to get back to duty at the prison. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Aaron Childers was standing across the street from the prison gate, leaning against a telegraph pole with his arms folded across his chest. He monitored the comings and goings at the gate. Most of the arrivals were people who were going about some aspect of business. A grocer arrived with a wagon full of groceries for the prison kitchen. A preacher arrived, and a couple of off-duty guards departed. In every case, those arriving or departing had to show identification to the gate guard before they were allowed to pass. At exactly 1:30, Aaron saw his brother. Frank walked unaccompanied down a long sidewalk that led from the main building to the wall and front gate. Aaron could see him through the gate. Reaching the front gate, Frank showed the guard a paper. The guard looked at it, nodded, and another guard opened the gate. Frank stepped through it, then stood outside, looking around nervously as if unsure that it was real, that he was actually free.
Frank!
Aaron didn't leave his position by the telegraph pole. Hearing his name called, Frank looked across the street and, seeing his brother, smiled and hurried across to him.
It's good to see you. Damn! I knew it had to be you. A guard came up to me and told me I was being set free today. First, I didn't believe him. In fact, I'm not sure I believe it now. But here I am.
What do you say we get out of here?
I say let's go. I can't get away from this place fast enough.
Come on, I got a couple horses back at the livery stable. We got places to go.
Places to go and a horse to ride. You've no idea how good that sounds. By the way, where's Corey?
What do you mean, where's Corey? Don't you know?
I heard you broke him and Ethan out of jail.
Yeah, we did. But the two of them got themselves killed.
Oh, nobody told me that.
Come on, we got a long ride ahead of us.
Where are we going?
We're going to collect $5,000.